Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back with me as a guest Tricia McCannon. Tricia has been on the show many times. She is the author of multiple books, Dialogues with the Angels, Jesus, the Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years and the Ancient Mystery Religions, Return of the Divine Sophia, Healing the Earth Through the Lost Wisdom Teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalene, and The Angelic Origins of the Soul, Discovering Your Divine Purpose. Now, we've interviewed her on these books, and if you go to www.plasticos.com and look in archives, which go back to 2011, I believe you'll find most of those interviews. Now, Tricia was sharing with me prior to this interview that she has a series of online courses that have been available for a while now, and today we're going to be discussing her newest one, Egyptian Pyramids, but I'm going to let her introduce you to the other programs that she has online, as well as how you can access all of this material. Welcome, Tricia. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Thank you so much for having me back. I always adore doing your show, and as you know, I'm one of your great fans, so it's always such a pleasure to do the Temple of Health radio show.
Well, we've been friends probably since the early 90s. It's been a long time.
I find you to be really amazing, Susan, in so many ways, because you're very grounded and very practical. You've helped probably thousands of people with your healing. And, you know, you're a medically trained doctor. You have a four-room surgical center. And yet, you know, you're also very spiritual and intuitive and tuned in. And, you know, you head up the chapter for Noetic Sciences here in Atlanta. So, I don't know. I just think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes I tell people I'm a spiritual healer that was guided to be a plastic surgeon. I think that and you were similarly guided. We all came in with missions that were probably pre-programmed, and so I think that we agreed to this prior to incarnating, which is we didn't always know that we'd have the rough times that we have, but certainly the general mission was there. Would you mind giving the audience your contact information so that they can take a look at all the great material that is available through your books and through your online webinars?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, and I'll talk a little bit about what's there. My website is www.TriciaMcCannonSpeaks.com, so that's T-R-I-C-I-A. And then McCannon is M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, and then the word speaks.com. And, you know, you're going to find so much stuff there. You know, I have actually all sorts of wonderful free articles there. I have some podcasts and so forth. But I have, over the last 14 years, developed an incredible online mystery school class that for many, many years I taught here in Atlanta in person, and I had people come from really all over the U.S. They would fly in literally every single month for about 12 classes, and I had so many people say, do you have these online? Because, you know, lots of people can't fly in like that. And so I finally got the first 12 classes online. So if you look at my website, you'll see up at the top, it'll say Mysteries, and there's a drop-down menu for online classes, and you can actually... Each one of the classes is like 100 to 180 pages with maybe 100 illustrations and all sorts of processes. And they're on everything from the Tree of Life to developing your psychic ability to learning how to soul travel, astral travel, navigate your dreams, learning about hermetics, which is the secret language really of the soul, which is a symbol language that the ancients knew where they encoded information. And the higher self knows this language, and a lot of us, of course, you know, receive it through our dreams, so to speak, but we don't really get it in any other way. So it's a powerful set of codes and keys for opening up your higher consciousness. So anyway, you'll see all 12 of those classes, and you can order them, and they're actually really inexpensive. They're like $99 a piece, or if you order the first three or the second three or the third three, you know, it's $225, so it takes $75 off right away, and then I get it and I send them to you as a PDF, and you just click on them, they open like a book, and you can print them off. So Those are wonderful. And then, of course, I have about 30 DVDs and CDs on all sorts of things with the mysteries and the lost years of Jesus and the divine feminine and the Egyptian mysteries and so forth. And my four books, you'll find all that stuff under the shopping tab. And, you know, they're overviews and reviews, five-star reviews of all those books. But what I was telling you about before we started was something I'm extremely excited about, which is a company that is an online university, and they're called SacredStoriesMedia.com. And they contacted me last year and said, we've read two or three of your books. We're blown away. We really want you to come teach for our university. So I launched the first class in December of 2017. And each one of these classes is amazing. They're probably 1,200 gorgeous, stunning images in six or seven, you know, modules that are each about an hour and a half. And basically, it's probably 10 hours of course material. So the first one was on the lost years and secret teachings of Jesus. The second one, which has been their best-selling class ever, is on Mary Magdalene, the quest for the Holy Grail, the Merovingian bloodline, the history of the goddess that most of us were never taught in school, where for thousands of years we had peace on this planet and men and women ruled together in a partnership model of equality because God was thought of as the sacred mother, the divine mother creatress. And it was considered that everything, all life, was sacred. And it really changed our paradigm of thinking, so we weren't so immersed in war and competition and aggression. And so that's a very powerful course. And then I've just completed one that I'm very excited about. This just launched in about 2 weeks ago on the Egyptian mysteries. And what happens with Sacred Stories Media, you know, you can go to that website and click on the top where it says Sacred U for University, and it'll take you to that page. And also, you know, if you contact me and send me an email at Tricia McCannon Speaks at yahoo.com and say, add me to your newsletter, that's absolutely fine, and then we'll send out a newsletter to you and tell you about these courses. But when they launch the courses, because it's so, I mean, it takes me, like I said, about 2 months of intensive work to put together one of these courses, and of course it's taken 40 years to be able to really gather and master the information as a spiritual initiate and teacher. This particular class in the Egyptian Mysteries really starts off with the quest for the Philosopher's Stone. Then it goes into Thoth, who began the great spiritual mysteries all over the world and set up mystery schools. It goes into Isis. There's a whole class on the Divine Mother and who Isis really, really was. And, of course, she was really the perennial expression of all women. You know, she was a daughter, she was a sister, she was a mother, she was a wife, she became a widow, she was a queen, she became a refugee, and in the end, it was her wisdom that helped to restore balance and light to Egypt. There's a whole class on Hermetics, which is a brand new class. It's different, really, from the DVD that I have on Hermetics, as is the Philosopher's Stone course. I'm always bringing more knowledge and more information in. I just can't help myself. There's a class that deals with the Emerald Tablets, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and what it teaches in terms of what happens to the soul when we go over to the other side and how we go through the life review. And this was all Egyptian cosmology, of course. There's a whole module on the many gods and goddesses so that, you know, if you've ever kind of wondered why some of them like have like a dog's head or a cat's head or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, did they really look like that? Maybe, maybe not. Certainly they had a human form, but they also had this zoomorphic form or an animal form. And, of course, that was sort of a shorthand code in many ways for what they came to represent, because the lion always represented the heart and courage, where the dog, of course, represents loyalty and fidelity, faithfulness, one who is in service, just like the hawk, Horus, and Ra represented one who, you know, whose wings span the horizon and who has clear vision and has the ability to see, you know, the big picture and also see very very focusedly, so they can see all the details, but they also have access to the big picture. So, you know, I really talk about how the Egyptians encoded this wisdom and knowledge of the afterlife into their cosmology and into what, you know, we think of as the Egyptian gods. And, of course,
I just want to interject here before you go on. I was just listening to Corey Good talk about the secret space program, and that there is a higher dimensional being that is sixth density, that is has a feline, you know, appearance, and that so that would
indeed
be confirmation that these beings probably do exist. And unfortunately, he was he said that they were they had a capture and or kill order out for them, so that the one that he saw was actually burned because it was caught in an electrical trap. Certainly there is evidence from the secret space program that these beings do exist.
Yeah,
currently,
you know
not just
blue
in Egypt.
Yeah, there's the blue avians or the bird-headed beings.
Right. Yeah.
These are higher dimensional beings, and they were world civilizers. You know, Egypt is probably the longest sustaining culture that we know of. I mean, it even in traditional archaeological terms, the archaeologists place it around 3100 BC. And, of course, if you go back to the king's list that was produced by Manetho, the high priest at the Temple of Heliopolis, the Temple of the Sun, and this was produced in the reign of the Ptolemies. If you remember, I don't know if you guys are real familiar with Egyptian history, but basically, even in the traditional world, there's the Old Kingdom that runs from about 3100 to about 2600 or so BC. There's the Middle Kingdom, and then there's the New Kingdom. And in between each one of those, they call them the first intermediary period and the second, which is about 100 years. And it's 100 years where there was a, you know, real shakeup in the dynasties of the lineage that was being passed down. Maybe there was invasion or turmoil or so forth. And so then in the last period, in the end of the New Kingdom, after Alexander the Great, you know, the great Greek conqueror, who, you know, conquered and defeated Persia and wound up going to India. And, of course, before he went to India, he wound up going to Egypt. And the Egyptians really loved him. They honored him, actually, as a half-human, half-divine son of Ra. And he wound up going to the oracle actually, you know, hearing this proclaimed, because it was, the question was, you know, whether his mother, the queen, had actually slept with the god. And this was, he was from, you know, Philip of Macedonia was supposedly his father, the king, but, you know, Philip was a very brutal and brutalizing man. So it was said that his wife actually had slept with the god. So Alexander, as we know, all died young. He died in Persia after the Indian invasion, which was finally turned back. He was finally defeated. But he had gone to Egypt, fallen in love with Egypt. Egypt fell in love with him because Egypt had been brutalized by the Persians. The Persians were a huge empire, and they had come in and tried to conquer everybody, basically. And the Egyptians weren't so crazy about the Persians. And so they had embraced Alexander full on. And so when Alexander was dying, he turned to his generals and said, okay, well, if I die, what portion of the empire do you want? And Ptolemy, who was his dear friend and general, said, I want Egypt. So Ptolemy went and set up the city of Alexandria, which became really the New York City or London or Paris, Mecca of the civilized ancient world for a long, long time. And that was around 332 BC. And, of course, he brought in all of the incredible Greek philosophers and scientists, the Egyptian wisdom, the Buddhists were there, the Hebrews were there, the Greek philosophers like Philo was there. So it was a time of enormous cultural sharing and discoveries. For example, Democritus discovered the atom in Greek in that time around 300 BC. And of course, if you remember, Pythagoras had gone to study there in the 400s. Plato had studied from Socrates had gone to Egypt to study. So Egypt, actually, they loved the Greeks, and there's a lot of reasons, but if we go back much further than, quote, you know, traditional history, it's said that in the last days of Atlantis had fallen into a very warlike culture, and they had, you know, a lot of the big continent had gone down and so forth, and so they wanted, you know, people to pay tribute, and so they came into the Mediterranean and conquered that whole area, and including Egypt. And this, of course, would put it back, you know, before Atlantis went down, before the poles shifted, mm-hmm. you know, at least 9,000 BC, about 12,000 years ago. And what happened is the Greeks are the people who stood up, the ancient Greeks, and repelled the Atlanteans when they had kind of fallen out of balance. And because of that, the Egyptians always remembered. And Manetho, when he brought to the second Ptolemy the king's list from Heliopolis, it literally showed that when the gods had settled Egypt, that Ptah, who would be in the Sumerian, would probably be Enki, who was a great humanitarian and lover of humankind, that he ruled for like, 9,000 years. That's a really long time, obviously very long
yeah.
beings. And then that Ra, his firstborn son, had ruled for 1,000 years. And that then mm-hmm. it began to pass to others. And eventually the last of the gods to rule was Horus, who ruled for about 300 years. But, you know, his father, there was a whole group of those souls, I think, that were very enlightened. We would call it the Christ consciousness. They were mm-hmm. they were lovers of humanity. They taught us the arts and science of civilization. And, of course, those arts and science are the foundation of all of our civilizations today. We may think in traditional terms that we, you know, mark our foundations from Greece, but Herodotus, who was a Greek historian around 450 BC, said, "We Greeks are as children next to the Egyptians. Everything of any importance we got from them, including our understanding of the gods." So,
and isn't that partially because a lot of the more advanced people left Atlantis prior to the cataclysm and went to Egypt?
Yes.
Taking
you know,
that knowledge with them? I mean, I think that it probably came from the extraterrestrial influence in Atlantis, you know, the good extraterrestrials, but brought all that knowledge into Egypt.
I think that you're very right. In fact, Thos was Ptah's second son, and Thos was the god of wisdom. And, mm-hmm. of course, he helped to set up and construct the whole civilization of Egypt. It was probably Thos, Ra, and Ptah, their father, who set all the foundations that we think of as the Egyptian wisdom and culture, and then, of course, others like Isis and Osiris and so forth added mm-hmm. to it. But there was a point where Thoth went and ruled Atlantis for over 1,000 years, and he mm-hmm. set up the Emerald Tablets literally within the center of the innermost island. And so Atlantis, it's kind of a big conversation, and I have some amazing presentations on it. I actually have one really great DVD online about it. But, you know, I just got asked, in fact, to start teaching for Dolores Cannon's university. She's setting up one called the Cannon University of mm-hmm. Metaphysics. And, of course, I love Dolores. She, you know, is the author of 19 books, including the Nostradamus books and so forth. And
mm-hmm.
her lovely daughters, Julia Cannon and Nancy Cannon, have continued her work. And every year they have a transformation conference, which I've spoken at, and they have the UFO Eureka Springs conference, which I've spoken at. And they've
mm-hmm.
just called me and said, would I consider putting on a whole series? And so this fall, you know, probably launched by sometime maybe in the winter, I'm going to do a whole series on ancient civilizations and Atlantis and Antarctica and, you know, how these pieces fit together. But the Egyptian portion is a big section because it's not only predates the flood, but it also, you know, is on the other side, the more recent side of the flood. And I think that I love Egypt. I think most people have been fascinated. I mean, haven't you been fascinated by the pyramids and the Sphinx and all of that?
Yeah, well, what I think that until Atlantis is uncovered in the Antarctic, which hopefully will be in the next few years, Egypt was the main remnants of Atlantis that were available to us to study. And the history of Egypt was intact. In other words, it wasn't buried under the ice like Atlantis was. So
yes.
Anything from Atlantis that was the wisdom and the, you know, the way of governing and the good part of what was in Atlantis was transferred to Egypt. And so
yes.
But and it was covered up historically. I mean, I don't think that, you know, we really understood other than through Plato and through some other you know, key people that were just speaking of what they knew, but the true evidence of Atlantis is now being uncovered, and hopefully will be part of disclosure.
Yeah, if I can, I'd like to kind of speak to the Atlantis part for a minute.
Sure.
So let me say that I've done a lot of research on Atlantis because perhaps like a lot of our listeners, you know, we incarnated there. I mean, a lot of us as souls have a history in Atlantis, and also
mm-hmm.
some in Lemuria. And they were both ancient cultures, Lemuria in the Pacific, and huge. And, of course, we have the Pitcairn Islands and Samoa and Hawaii and, you know, all of those that are the remnants of what's left. And, of course, Antarctica and the Maori that came over from there, and of course some of the cultures from the east, and you can see how different those cultures have been to the Western cultures, and thank goodness, because they have a lot of wonderful, you know, things, elements. But Atlantis went through many different phases. It was almost like, it was really like a continent, really, in the Atlantic Ocean about 100,000 years ago, and they wound up having the first kind of destruction of that land about 52,000 years ago when the technology had progressed to the point that they were using a firestone, a fire crystal that was being used for higher dimensional purposes to help keep people attuned spiritually. But there was there were a lot of large animals, like giant sloths that were, you know, 15 feet tall and so forth, that were up in the mountains that were coming down, and they were pestering, to put it mildly, the people. And so the powers that be voted to turn the fire crystal into a weapon, and
mm-hmm.
unfortunately they unleashed an antimatter device that broke Atlantis up into five separate land masses that were like, you know, continent islands, kind of like maybe Australia. And then, and that was huge. And that area that went down so terribly was near the Sargasso Sea, which is still a strange, eerie sea now that you pass when you're kind of coming into the Caribbean and the Bahamas, where everything is eerily still. I mean, sailors talk about how weird it is and things
mm-hmm.
that happen there. And then, so then the next big destruction was around 28,000 years ago, where
mm-hmm.
we wind up, you know, having it go down to three continent islands. Then 22,000 years ago, when it goes down to the one big continent island that we think of when we hear the stories of Plato, when Plato
mm-hmm.
tells that story. So each time there was a receding and they started over. And the last time, you know, the Galactic Council was really did a call for a lot of higher consciousness souls to come down to the planet to try to begin to create a golden age. And they succeeded. And for a long time, especially from about 16,050 to about 14,000 years ago, they managed, in fact, to create a very high society with telepathic abilities and telekinetic abilities that was a star capital where many of the extraterrestrial groups, the Sirians, the Pleiadians, the Andromedans, most of them looking very human, were coming to Earth and interacting with us. But mm-hmm. as usual, you know, what happens is greed happens, ego happens, the misuse of sexual energies, like we have pornography today, the misuse mm-hmm. of genetics, like we have today, going on today, mostly in secret. All these things begin to once again rear their heads. And in the end, it was so, you know, they actually were trying to use technology to drill into the Earth's core. And that could have taken the split the planet apart. Mm-hmm. And so it was decided that they had to be taken down because they just did not seem to be learning the lessons. Just like today, you know, we're facing the same thing. We've got what Edgar
Casey... probably from the same groups. You know, that's it, just they're coming back. I mean, the whole thing about Atlantis viciously attacked Lemuria right before all of this was put to a halt, you know. And now we're, you know, there's people out there that believe that had Clinton been elected, we would be in World War III now. So we would again be attacking, rather than, you know, trying to make peace. So.
Well, it's hard to say because our politics today are just so cattywampus, and I know people are very polarized on either side, and certainly I'm sure, you know, Clinton had things in her closet, but I do think that under the Obama administration, she really turned towards the light, and she became aware of the ETs and the ET agenda and the importance of us coming into the galactic family. But, you know, We have a very difficult situation, as we can tell, that's based in large part on power, money, control, and, you know, the power elite. And, you know, what are there have been studies that something like 3% of the population controls 94% of the wealth in the world. And then that means, of course, that 6% of the wealth in the world is distributed among 97% of the people. And so that's, you know, the people who are in power are very invested in staying in power. And we're facing the same kinds of things where the dark force is using pornography to corrupt people's natural alignment with the light around sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Pedophilia, which is the arrest for pedophilia, have gone way up. And Satanism, you know, the adrenochrome and other things that are going on in Hollywood. I mean, all sorts of things are being revealed now. And it seems like this polarization occurs right before every ascension event. You know, it's almost like it gets really revved up. And then you have the event of either the pole shift and the ascension being simultaneously timed, and it's just very interesting. The same thing probably occurred in Atlantis before the last pole shift.
Well, definitely there are people like you and me and probably a lot of our listeners in Atlantis who were actively involved in trying to wake people up, spread the word, mm-hmm. say, hey, you know, pay attention, we're in trouble. And some of those people wisely prepared, because
right.
the earthquake activity was increasing all the time, by setting up 10 different colonies. And one of the mm-hmm. big ones was in Central America. And
right.
some of that,
yeah.
of course, has gone down into Bimini and Bahamas and is underwater now. But this is why you find a lot of crystal skulls and pyramids in mm-hmm. Central America and South America. And then, of course, as you said, Egypt, the Pyrenees, also England, the Ireland and England, the Emerald Isles. So there were migrations.
Too.
But, of course, yeah. even though we can say they were prepared, who is, you know, we can say, okay, we know there's a pole shift coming, but if it started happening right now, would we really feel prepared? No. I mean, so it's just kind of like how fast
I'm not sure we have to be prepared, though, because my understanding is that the pole shift and the ascension are temporarily together, but that if you are ascending, you don't experience the negative effects of the pole shift. So, you know, that's how you get past the fear thing. What you do is try to get people to work on themselves, try to get them to, you know, handle their past trauma, do the forgiveness work, raise their vibration to the point that they're going to ascend so they don't have to worry about the safe zones, you know. And you know, we're in Atlanta. Atlanta's fairly safe, according to all of the maps.
Above sea level, yes, exactly. We're in terms of the country, you know, we have 4 beautiful seasons. We can raise our crops here. We don't have excessive drought. We do have, of course, some heavy rains these days. But, you know, I think of all the places we could be, this is a pretty temperate, you know, version.
It is. Yeah.
So we're absolutely lucky. But, you know, it's interesting, this whole thing. You know, a lot of my work, as you know, I've done over 6,000 readings for people all around the world in the last 30-something years. And I have clients that come from all over to do exactly the kind of work you're talking about. I'm trained as a hypnotherapist and in about 10 other modalities, which are all very much about going into, you know, there's 4 brainwave states, beta, the conscious mind, alpha, the subconscious, theta, which is where we keep our past life memories, and delta, which is more the higher mind. And so my work is very much about going into alpha, theta, and delta with my clients to help them figure out where their blocks are, whether they're in this lifetime or they're in past lives, and resolving those traumas and returning those frequencies that allow them to be able to, you know, attract the love and the money and the success and the purpose and the empowerment.
And it's critical right now because the people, and I'm sure you've seen this, the people who are doing the work, that are involved in the, you know, their own missions and working on themselves, are getting more blissful, more stable, more peaceful. And then other people who haven't worked on these traumas, haven't done the forgiveness work, are spiraling down. And Yogi Bhajan and some of the other masters said that this would be a time of vast neurological problems and vast psychiatric problems, because the neurological system and the mental, you know, your emotional mental system may not be able to handle the energies that are coming in now. So this is the divide. And Jesus talked about separating the wheat from the chaff. In other words, he was talking about an energetic separation. So this occurs before every ascension event. It builds up, and according to Corey Good, it's been delayed with help of some extraterrestrial technology so that we won't all go crazy, you know, or many of us go crazy too soon. So we've been probably given about 5 or 6 years to have this thing go slower than it should have. But it is coming to an end, and so now would be a good time to work on all these things, especially if you find your life kind of in chaos, your emotions in chaos, your relationships and finances in chaos. You need to understand that there's a way out of that.
I totally agree, and I think that, you know, one of the things that's been happening this summer is there have been 6 planets in retrograde.
Which has not happened in a long time, at least in our lifetime.
Oh, my God. Saturn, which rules business, so it slowed down a lot of business for some people, and then it's made other people become workaholics. Saturn today, for example, is at 2 degrees of Capricorn. I'm a 4 and 5 degree Capricorn, so I'm working all the time. But my sister is a 3 degree Aries, so Saturn's squaring Aries, so it's created lots of blocks and roadblocks and business. That would also be true for Libras because it squares Libra, and, of course, it's opposite Cancer. Pluto, which is, of course, life, death, sex, and taxes, and deep shamanic initiation and past karma, when it retrogrades, you're going back over unresolved issues and being given a chance to heal them and to find where you lost your power and reclaim them. And that's going to be true probably through the end of the year.
And that's all inner work. That's all inner work.
It's all inner work. Chiron is retrograde, and Chiron, of course, is a planetoid. It's bigger than a moon and smaller than a planet, and it rotates every 50 years in a big elliptical orbit around the ecliptic, which is the flat plate that all the planets go around on. And Chiron represents, in anybody's chart, our wounding patterns, where we've been wounded, where we need to go in and do the healing work. And if we do, we can actually become the master healer that can turn around and help other people. And it's retrograde at 1 degree of Aries. So it's going to be about, you know, who am I? You know, what is my identity? What is my place in the world? How do I move forward with my life? What is my purpose? What is my destiny? So people who might feel like they're asking that question but feeling frustrated or thwarted, and it's really because they have boulders in their path, which everybody has boulders, you know, it's but they're subconscious boulders, and they really kind of have to go in, like you said, do the inner work, blow up the boulders so they can find the path that's right in front of them.
It's really a good time. Yeah, it's really a good time too to understand that you are not your wounds. In other words, a lot of people get their identity from becoming a victim of whatever, and so the victim identity is going to spiral you down. It's going to create more opportunities to become a victim. When Chiron goes into retrograde, you have the opportunity to understand that you can release all the you know, hatreds and lack of forgiveness and everything that is involved with being a victim, and then you can cease to be a victim, which is really what this is all about, and then start spiraling upward.
And on top of that, Uranus is retrograde, and I have to say that one has been kicking a lot of people's rear ends, because Uranus rules computers and technology. Oh my God. So, you know, people have had crashes. I just had this thing with my website. My website is still working perfectly, but I went to update it because I've got a conference in L.A. the beginning of October, this Egyptian mystery class. And then there's a Star Knowledge Conference, which we should actually do a show on. It's the second weekend in November, and it's in North Georgia at the Amicalola State Park. And that's Native American wisdom with other light workers, and I'm going to be speaking at that one. And that I went to update my website. Sure enough, WordPress, my site's built on WordPress. I'm in 5.2, and in order to go to 5.4, GoDaddy tells me that my site has a 50-50 chance of crashing.
Oh,
and so
no.
I'm leaving it alone, but I'm going to have to completely rebuild my site in September.
Wow.
That's Uranus in retrograde.
Yeah. So, well, what about Mercury and Mars? Are they coming out of retrograde yet?
Well, Mercury just went direct, thank goodness, because, of course, that's communication and emails and phone messages and planes and trains and transportation systems. So it just went direct last Sunday. So we're just coming out of the shadow, if you can say that, of the retrograde. So this week, things have started to flow better for people. Mars is retrograde at 28 degrees of Capricorn right now. And so, again, it can be affecting feeling like, you know, you have a drive to go forward in business, but then feeling like you're having to go back and redo things or review things, or that things aren't quite like, oh, yes, we have all this business coming in, but it's not quite there, you know. And let me see if I can see. I'm not sure when Mars goes direct. I'll see if I can
look. I think it's at the end of the month.
Well, that would just be so wonderful. I think a lot of people in business will be jumping up and down about that one.
Yeah.
So that's really good news. You know, these planets, a lot of them have been on one side, too. And that creates its own challenge, because then we feel sometimes like we're, you know, I was in balance before. What happened? You know, or we think it's something. Is there something wrong with me that the door is not opening? Well, I think it is again a time to go inside and say, you know, if I can't go take my ship out on the ocean, if the tide is coming in, it's time to mend the nets, repair the boat, do the inspection, sort through the things that I don't need, let those things go, and then you're ready when the tide turns.
Yeah, they've told me I'm in quarantine right now. Just that's what they've said. You're in quarantine. You're not supposed to be. You're supposed to be doing your radio show. You know, we have some business, but it's not super busy. It looks like September will be more busy, just like you said. But I'm fine not being busy because I don't feel like working.
You're always busy.
No, I don't feel like working. So, you know, if I had to work the usual pace, which is like 60 hours a week, I would feel put upon. You know, I would feel resistance to that. So
well,
I don't know what this quarantine's all about, but I'm being told I'm really in quarantine. And so whatever it is that I'm going through, which is mostly sleeping most of the time, so I imagine it has to do with higher level work rather than, you know, just, I'm not ill or anything, so it has nothing to do with that. But normally I couldn't sleep this much.
Well, I will tell you, Mars goes direct on Monday the 27th. So is that this Monday?
Yeah.
At 10 a.m.
That's what I thought. I thought it might be the 29th, but it's 27th.
It's Monday the 27th. I think we should all be just jumping up and down. Because
right.
What that will do is it will give a burst to your movement, in Capricorn, especially around business. And, of course, mm-hmm. it'll wind up going into... wind up going into another sign. Let me just see. I think it's going to be going into Aquarius. So it'll open up not only business opportunities, but also opportunities for sort of expanded consciousness, humanitarian efforts, you know, hospitals, charities, brotherly
and the humanitarian funds are coming in, so that'll many of the light workers are associated with the humanitarian projects that are coming in shortly, so that they will have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, so September
once
really
the funds come in, yeah,
opens up. But I think this summer has been difficult for a lot of people because of all these retrogrades, and I think it's important to. On one hand, no, it's not like there's something wrong with you. You know, it's season.
It's more solar system.
It's more the solar.
It's not even planetary. It's more solar system.
But it is a time to go in, like you say, and take a sabbatical and step back mm-hmm. and say, you know, what can I clean out in my life? What can I change?
Right.
What can I heal? What can I repair, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of exciting. It's like we're giving the astrological weather report.
Right. Well, it is true, though. I mean, nine planets in retrograde has – how often does that occur? Do you know? It must be very rare.
But, I mean, it has been – Mercury just went direct, so that's one. Saturn, Pluto, Mars, Neptune, that's spirituality, also the film industry – Chiron and Uranus. That is seven planets. So the only things that are direct right now are the Moon, Jupiter, mm-hmm. Venus is direct, and Mercury, of course, is now gone direct. So that's a big load. That's a big load for everybody, you know.
Well,
so
I had a vacation because I was told early on what was going to happen, and so I wasn't worried about it. You know, I didn't freak out about it. So, and I tried to tell all my staff, you know, that this was going to happen too, that we were just sort of, you know, on. And then basically everything worked out pretty well. So.
Well, you're so tuned in, and you know, really, really intuitive. And I love that we can have conversations on every level about history, about health, about politics, about astrology, about the Egyptian mysteries, about mm-hmm. the lost years of Jesus, the nature of the soul, the landscapes of heaven, the divine feminine. I mean, this is one of the reasons I find you and your show and your audience that listens to this so totally delightful, because, you know, we're all on the bigger page. And, of course, mm-hmm. there's corners where we can know, you know, we can always learn. And this is one of the reasons why I continue to teach. And I personally think that these mysteries that I'm teaching are so important because it's not dated. It's perennial wisdom. In other mm-hmm. words, you know, the ancients, I want to just talk about this for a minute. The ancients mm-hmm. talk about the fact that there are three waves of consciousness in the universe. the sattva, which is the golden wave, sattva yuga or sattva age, golden age, the sattva energy pulls us up into connection with our higher self. It aligns us with our purpose. The tamasic energy pulls us down into the darker realms and away from our higher self and our true knowing. So that's like, you know, all the dark stuff you were talking about with pornography and pedophilia and, you know, werewolves and vampires and, you know, just dark stuff. And then the Raja culture is the horizontal. It's the materialistic culture. It's rich. It's abundant. You know, buy. But and it has a an aspect of religion, but the religion's not really telling you about how to achieve mastery. So we live in a Raja culture, but it has a subculture of tamasic dark energies and a subculture of sattva lighter energies. And it's not about having to be all one thing or another. I think that's important for people to get. Like, I spend, you know, 8 hours a day in sattva because I'm doing all this healing work. But guess what? When I, you know, take off at night, sometimes I want to watch Supernatural or, you know, a vampire movie, okay?
Right. Yeah.
Or I want to go shopping, you know, once a month and have some retail therapy. So
yeah,
we all need balance. My roommate, for example, works in the retail business. She does Raja 12 hours a day. So when she's off, she wants to do sattva and take a spiritual class.
That's right. I visit her when I go down to the gift mart.
Yes. I'm good at it.
And I love going down to the gift mart. But you know what I like about the gift mart is creativity. You walk in this giant building. I mean, I think it's 14 stories, and it's where retailers go to buy wholesale. And basically, there's creativity everywhere. I just go around looking at everything. I think it's fascinating. You know, just that kind of creativity blows me away.
The Raja culture offers enormous variety and abundance and creative expression. And
it does.
And it's all very fun, as you say.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's about balance in our lives. And so having said this, there are certain cultures that are primarily sattva cultures, like this golden age of Atlantis we were talking about. It was in the sattva era for a long, long time, thousands of years, and then it fell into more violence and aggression and war and so forth. And the Egyptian culture was basically, like the Indian culture, a sattva culture. Their jewelry, their clothes, their temples, their statues, everything was aligned to the higher worlds. It was aligned to knowing that we are eternal beings. We come down, we take a life, we learn, we grow, we share, we love, we do the best we can, and then we hopefully make forward progress in our spiritual journey. And it doesn't mean that they didn't go to war from time to time, or they weren't dealing with food shortages or food abundances. They had politics and so forth. But the culture itself was wrapped around this idea of each soul being an eternal being. And so that's one of the reasons why I really love the Egyptian mysteries, because they taught each soul that this is, we don't just have one life. We are eternal. We come down here like going to school. And it makes you consider your choices about what you do with the time that is given to you.
Right.
And that what we sow in our life is what we reap either in this lifetime or the next. So that teaches
Well, what you believe will really influence your choices. If you believe that you only have one lifetime and, you know, you're here to get as much money and power and personal gratification as possible, it's very different choices than if you realize that every lifetime you have ability, you know, you have the opportunity for increasing your vibratory rate so that you can go through this ascension process and get out of the suffering. Those are two very different landscapes.
You're so right. Anyway, this is why I love the teachings, wisdom. And in the Egyptian class, I mean the Jesus class, you know, if you go to sacredstoriesmedia.com and you click on Sacred You, you literally will see all three of those classes. You can watch the very first class, which is like an hour, hour and a half, for free on every single one of them. And then you can say, okay, yeah, I want to take the class. And the cool thing about it is once you sign up for it, you can watch it a week from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. You can watch it as many times as you want. because it's always available to you at that point. So people can do it on their own time schedules. And I really love that about Sacred U University.
Yeah.
And
that's
then
good,
and I'm
you're right. That's important.
I think it is important, especially with our crazy schedules. But I've had people mm-hmm. who just blasted through it, started over, and, you know, like written these 5-star reviews, like, oh, my God, it completely activated me and connected me with this inner knowing that I've always had. So there are a lot of work for me to do these classes, honest to God. But at one point, after, you know, 12 hours a day on the computer for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I'm like carpal tunnel syndrome. But I'm proud of them, and I think that they touch people, and that is what my mission is in this lifetime, is to awaken people and help them to achieve higher mastery.
Well, you know, Tricia, I've been doing Temple of Health radio show for about 23 years and interview an author every week, basically, usually an author. And I have to put you at the top of all the people I've interviewed. And I've interviewed some very, very famous people as the most prolific researcher I know. So I'm going to just put that out there for people, that your stuff is researched to the nth degree. It you bring stuff out that I think because you're clairvoyant, you know where to go and look. I think, you know, when you're not as tuned in, you don't get direction about where to find things. But you've uncovered stuff that is just so amazing in all of your books, and especially the Jesus book. And so, you know, you're a researcher, but you're a spiritually guided researcher, and that's unusual, very unusual.
Well, you know, my dad was a lawyer, and my family, I kind of come out of a very traditional Christian background, and my older sister is a fundamentalist with a brother-in-law that's a preacher. And so I kind mm-hmm. of learned early on that even if I received all this inner mystical knowing, that I really needed to do the research to ground it in history and science so that, you know, I could prove it. And so I feel like if I could lay out the puzzle pieces for people, then they can come to their own understanding and their own conclusion because they've seen the evidence for themselves. And then it makes it much easier, you know, for everyone, because we're actually addressing the left and the right sides of the brain for a balanced, you know, view of reality. So,
well, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yeah, my pleasure. Again, my website is www.trishamcannonspeaks.com, and that's T-R-I-C-I-A, that spelling, and McCannon's just like it sounds, M-C, and then Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N, and the word speaks.com or trishamcannon.com. And you'll find all sorts of cool stuff there. And as you know, I do readings. I do soul readings. And I'm actually in town a lot of the fall, except for a couple of conferences. And my phone number, unlike most websites, is actually on there. Shocking, but true. But you can read about the soul readings and all of that kind of stuff, or the astrology readings, if you're wanting to know more about, you know, where you are in this unfolding process. So thank you so much for having me. It's always
It's been great. It's been very good. And we can have you back on for some of the other, you know, webinar topics, if you'd like to go into them in more detail. Now that you're in town, because you're usually traveling and I can't get you on.
Well, because
so we'll do that.
Coming up in the second weekend of November here in Atlanta, I think it'd be mm-hmm. great if we could do a show maybe in September or in October.
Sure.
Let people
we'll set that up.
Know about it. So thank you so much, honey, for
you're
having
welcome.
Me. It's always such a joy to speak with you, and blessings to all of our listeners out there as the weather is finally starting to turn towards a little hint of fall. So.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Tricia McCannon on Egyptian pyramids. Join us next week for Dr. Eric Love, Addressing Anxiety, Depression, and Fear.